Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo. 90% of everybody that walks through your door, I would venture to say, will have some sort of problem with their thyroid or their adrenals, unless they're just coming to you because they want to learn how to eat well and prevent things from happening to them in the future. But if anybody walks through your door and they're experiencing any kind of fatigue or hormonal imbalance or brain fog, they most likely have something out of balance with their thyroid, their adrenal, or both. So that's why this topic is so near and dear to my heart. Anything that I tell you is from my experience to yours. It's not medical advice. Anything you tell your clients, unless you are an MD and you're in a situation where you are diagnosing and giving them a treatment protocol, it's all just advice. It's coaching. It's a sharing of knowledge and information, and always encourage them to speak with their primary care practitioner to get the okay if they're on any medication or they have any diagnosed condition. So why such a big commotion over such a small gland? It's not very big. It weighs but a few ounces. It sits in your neck, and it really does, in fact, look like a butterfly with the two wings, the right and the left lobe of the thyroid, and then the space in the middle that connects them is called the isthmus. And that is the seat of your metabolic rate. That is the seat of your every cell in your body relies on the thyroid to set its metabolic rate. And that is critically important, because it's one thing when your overall metabolic rate is low and you feel sluggish, you don't have the energy to make it through the day, you're falling asleep at your desk. But when each and every one of those tissues in your body is feeling sluggish, there are health implications there. If the heart doesn't have the energy, the cells in the heart do not have the cellular energy to take in nutrients, to put out debris, to do their function, you suffer. Every single system, and we'll be going through how thyroid affects every part of your body, what effects that has. So it is a big deal, and it's a huge epidemic in our society right now. And we'll go through some of the reasons. Part of it is because we live in a toxic world. We're exposed to toxins in our air, our water, and our food supply that put not only a stress on your liver and your detoxification mechanisms, but they actually damage the thyroid and interfere with the iodine uptake in the thyroid and cause you to have problems. So by the end of this presentation, I want you to feel comfortable with reading a thyroid lab, knowing which lab tests to order for someone, and knowing how to follow up, and knowing how to detect a thyroid problem even when the lab tests are normal. Because, my friends, in many, many situations, people are suffering from low thyroid. They go to the doctor, they're told to go on Prozac or go on some sort of a stress release program because they don't have a thyroid problem, because the lab tests are normal. And as we'll see, it may be that those lab tests are indeed normal by medical standards. They may not be normal by ideal standards, but sometimes the numbers are even normal or ideal by functional medicine standards, and there's still a thyroid problem. And when we look at the 22 different patterns of thyroid dysfunction, you will understand why this is so. If you don't already have the book, Why Do I Still Have Thyroid Symptoms When My Lab Tests Are Normal? It's a great reference book. If you don't have Dr. David Brownstein's book, Overcoming Thyroid Disorders, great book. I have a lot of thyroid books on my shelf. Some of them speak the same language, and some of them don't. There's some differences in opinions between things as basic as, do we need iodine, and should the person with a thyroid problem be taking iodine? And I'm going to address as many of these as I can. The issue is there's different perspectives, there's different people, and there's different mechanisms going on in various people, and what might work for one person may not work for the other. Thyroid and adrenal are two of the hormones that are in charge of your energy. the energy of every cell in your body. When your adrenals or your thyroid are sluggish, not working properly, you don't have the energy, both on, like I said, a global level, like you don't feel energetic, but you may feel energetic. I did a talk once, one of my earlier talks about fatigue, and someone came to it just because she was curious, and she didn't think she had any issues. And when I asked, you know, how many people here feel fatigued, like, oh, I would say 80% of the room. And I redefined fatigue. They said, how many of you have maybe some fatigue of an organ system? Do you have skin that wounds that don't heal quickly? Do you have constipation? Are you having 2 to 3 bowel movements a day every day? Or are your bowels sluggish? And on and on. And I asked some of those questions. And by then, even the people who thought they weren't fatigued and were just there to support me and listen and hear what I had to say, they were like, wow, I think I may have some issues going on, that my cells are not getting as much energy as they need to. So we have the pituitary, we have the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus stimulates the pituitary. I'm going to give you some places where you can go and learn the details of how this works in video format. I have a link a little bit further on. You've got the hypothalamus, which secretes a hormone called TRH. That TRH then stimulates the pituitary, which produces TSH, thyroid stimulating. TRH is thyroid releasing hormone, and TSH is thyroid stimulating hormone. And the pituitary secretes the TSH, which then stimulates the thyroid to increase its production of thyroid hormone. The thing is, and why these things come together so much, is because they're all part of that hypothalamic pituitary axis. We have what we call the HPA axis for the adrenals, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. And then we add the T to the end, HPAT, which is the thyroid as well. When you are overstimulating your adrenals because of high levels of stress, that's overstimulating your pituitary, which can then overstimulate your thyroid, which can then cause receptor burnout and a whole bunch of other things. So that's just one mechanism. There's a lot of mechanisms that could be going on. How does thyroid hormone get stimulated? I talked about that already. The TRH gets secreted by the hypothalamus. It goes to the anterior pituitary, which releases the TSH, and you can see this on this picture, which then stimulates the thyroid. So the control, this is a little bit more detail. I'm just trying to give you a lot of pictorial ways that you can see this, but it's important to understand. And there's a negative feedback loop that happens, so that if once the thyroid levels get above a certain point, then the TSH, the pituitary said, oh, I don't have to produce any more TSH. When the thyroid levels are very low in the blood, the pituitary is stimulated to produce more. When you see people who have very high levels of TSH, even when everything else is normal, it means that the thyroid is sluggish. The thyroid is still functioning. It's still able to produce what is considered in labs normal levels, but it is doing so with tremendous duress. Lots of spankings from the pituitary saying, produce, 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 until the level gets very high. The thyroid control mechanism, the TRH is secreted by the hypothalamus that causes the pituitary to stimulate to produce TSH. It then stimulates the thyroid to produce T4 and a small amount of T3. T4 is thyroxine. T3 is triiodothyronine. T4 is actually tetraiodothyronine. Four molecules of iodine. So the 3 and the 4 in the thyroid hormone names are the numbers of iodines in there. Those iodines are attached to something called thyroglobulin. Thyroglobulin is made up of a series of tyrosine molecules, and each of them has attached to it the iodine. So there's tyrosine and some other amino acids and some other components. It's actually quite a large molecule, TRH is. But T4 is then converted mostly in the peripheral tissue, mostly in the liver, mostly in the digestive tract, even in the lungs. It's converted from T4 to T3. T4 is considered, it's the most abundant of the forms of thyroid hormone, but it's the least active. It's very slow acting. It's more of a storage form. T3 is very small amounts available in your body, yet it's very active. And by design, it's not supposed to be high levels because it will overstimulate you. So we produce mostly T4, 80 to 90% of what the thyroid produces is actually called T4. The other 10 to 20 is T3. And there's an enzyme called 5-deiodinase that helps convert T4 to T3. But 5-deiodinase is similar to what we talked about with fatty acids, where we're looking at delta-6 desaturase, where it's very much sensitive to environmental and dietary influences. So 5-deiodinase is inhibited by stress. It's inhibited by illness, inflammation, fasting, excess cortisol, that's what the stress is, and other things. And we'll look at that later on when we look at the 22 patterns. And I want to say right up front, this is complex science, and memorizing a lot of things is not where it's at. You want to get the big picture, and then you want to have access to reference materials. And I've given you a lot of reference materials, and I will show you those shortly. So 80% of the T3 that's circulating in the blood was not produced by the thyroid. It was produced by your body tissues. But some of the factors that decrease the activity of the 5-deiodinase enzyme also cause T4 to convert more to reverse T3 instead of T3. Reverse T3 is an inactive form. And throughout the day, your body's making all this thyroid hormone, and you may not need it all. And if all of it got converted to T3, you could become a hyperthyroid. So much of it gets converted to, or a percentage, it's anywhere from 20 to 40% of the T4 gets converted to reverse T3. It's a one-way street. You can't take reverse T3 and convert it back. Okay, you can do things to get the levels of reverse T3 down. And when we look later in the presentation at the Wilson's method, we'll talk about how that works. Okay, so that's the overview in a nutshell. It's important for you to understand this. I have taken a lot of years of information and days and days and days at seminars and hundreds and actually thousands of pages of information. And I'm synthesizing it down to what I think you need to know. When I went to a 3-day thyroid seminar a few years back with Dr. Karazi, and I went to a 3-day thyroid seminar with Dr. Wilson and a few others. And that's a lot of information. And you get lost in the information. And it's nice to have more information. And I've given you a lot of resources so that you can dig deeper. But I want you to get the big picture first. Okay, and then we can go into it, and then you can use your reference materials. I am not going to even come close to pretending that I have all these different patterns memorized. The more I use them, the more I see them, the more it becomes my natural language. But until you've seen a lot of them, read a lot of labs, and reread and reread and reread again the reference materials in both the thyroid book and what I'm giving you, you're going to just constantly be struggling with it. And it's okay, because you're still going to be able to help a lot of people. So a summary of the substances that are involved in thyroid function, TRH, and where does that get secreted? The hypothalamus. Where's TSH get secreted? The pituitary. What about T4? Thyroxine, also known as, very rarely known as, tetraiodothyronine. And free T4? There's a binding globulin called thyroid binding globulin, which is different from thyroglobulin. It's very confusing at first because they sound similar. Thyroglobulin is at the heart of the thyroid hormone. Thyroid binding globulin is a carrier protein which transports the T3 and the T4 throughout your system. Then once it gets to the peripheral tissue, the receptors on the cell, it gets unbound from the receptor so that it can get into the cell as mostly free T3, a little bit of free T4. Biologically active thyroid is mostly free T3. Thyroid binding globulin is that protein that carries the thyroid hormone around the system. Thyroid peroxidase is actually an enzyme that's important in the formation, the synthesis of the thyroid molecules. And it basically takes the iodide and turns it to iodine. And that becomes active in the thyroid. And then there's the receptors. The dear darling receptors get the bad end of the stick, so to speak. Those thyroid receptors are overlooked as a possibility in causing problem. And we'll see there's actually 5 different patterns that are related to the receptors being unable to recognize the thyroid and allow it into the cell, similar to what we've talked about when we talked about insulin resistance, that when you don't have enough insulin and your cells become, I mean, not that you don't have enough, you have too much and your cells become resistant to it, you can't transport the sugar into the cells. Similar thing happens with the thyroid. So I'm taking time up front to give you a good overview before we dig in deep. I want to make sure that you get this. And then this is a little picture, and I have another picture on another slide. It's an overview of the process. Both of these guys have a lot of YouTube videos out there where they explain various biochemical and structural things in the body, endocrine things, and they're really cool videos. And I've given you links here, and I also loaded them on the page. We have, again, the picture of the thyroid hormone production. I gave it to you in a lot of different ways so that one of the ways is going to stick. One of the ways is going to get it for you. And I think watching those videos is also going to help you to really get it as well. But you basically have a source of iodine in your diet. If you don't, then your thyroid's in trouble. Then you have sources of protein. They have just listed meat, fish, poultry, eggs, greens, beans, everything else. But you've got amino acids, tyrosine. You've got iodine. And by the way, tyrosine is not an essential amino acid. If you remember from our amino acid section, it's a conditionally essential. If you have enough phenylalanine, which is essential, then you can make tyrosine from it, assuming you have the machinery in place to do it. So you take the iodine. The iodine gets converted to iodide, and that happens by the thyroid peroxidase enzyme. You then have the tyrosine and the iodine put together, and they make MIT and DIT, monoiodotyronine and diiodotyronine, 1 iodine and 2. So you have a bunch of these little units floating around of one iodine and 2. It's like the thyroid hormone that's missing a couple of iodines. And then to make T3, there's enzymes that get together that put you, that give you the MIT and DIT and make T3, and then 2 DITs make T4. And that's what happens in the gland. This is a very broad overview of it, and those videos will give you much more detail on that. And then in the liver and the peripheral tissue, T4 will get converted, some of it to T3, some of it to reverse T3, and some of it to free T3. So that's an overview of the different levels. Again, the more you see it, the more you're going to get it. This is the thyroxine. These purple balls, right, on the molecules, the purple molecules are your iodine, okay? And that's the chemical structure for those of you who are chemical geeks. Then the triiodo, the T3, you can see it has 3 iodines. And then the thyroglobulin is that core of the thyroid hormone that contains the tyrosine. So this gives you a little bit more detail. After you watch those videos, which are really nicely done simply, this will make more sense. But basically, on the right-hand side is the blood, and there's something called the sodium iodine symporter, NIS, sodium iodine symporter. And that takes from your bloodstream iodine plus sodium, brings it into the cell. This little cell is a thyroid follicular cell. And the way that it's set up, you see on the upper left-hand side, there's a bloodstream on the outside, and then this
thyroid follicular cell is around a lumen. And there's a bunch of these different cells. This is a close-up. But there's a lumen in the middle, and that's where a lot of these activities happen. It's kind of like a gluey kind of material that's outside of the actual follicular cells. So the sodium and the iodine come in. They are conjugated and put together to form the thyroid hormone. You can see this endocytosis takes it back into the cell, and we've already got our thyroid hormones formed. Actually, these are the DIT and the MIT. So you see this one with one purple ball on it, that's MIT. The two purple balls are DIT. You make that. That then gets put together with the thyroglobulin, and then it creates the thyroxine or the triiodothyronine or thyronine. So again, you don't have to become a biochemist. You don't have to become a cellular biologist. If you get the general gist of it, you're going to be able to help a lot of people. And if you want to go deeper, you can go deeper. This is actually a picture of the thyroid binding globulin. You can see that the T4 is attached to this, and it's huge. It's a huge molecule. Thyroid peroxidase. We measure thyroid peroxidase when we do antibodies, thyroid peroxidase antibodies. And one of the autoimmune thyroid conditions causes antibodies against this enzyme called thyroid peroxidase, the TPO. And the TPO is responsible for taking the iodine and converting it to iodide that then gets attached to the thyroglobulin and creates the T3 and T4. So the TPO is critical for creation of the T3, T4. If you recall, the other antibody that we often test for is antithyroglobulin. So we're either attacking the T3, T4 itself by attacking the thyroglobulin, or you're attacking the enzyme that catalyzes the reaction. Either case, it's not a pretty picture because you're not getting the quantity of thyroid hormone that you really need.